Thomas went to the Rainbow Gathering. And it's been a scramble because we thought it was 500 miles and it ended at 700 for a start. And the other thing is that once we got and turned off the freeway, which we thought was close to it, we then went 80 miles of secondary two-lane roads followed by 20 miles of dirt roads. So it was 100 miles of heavy roads off the freeway. And while we were there, we got to see a bunch of our old friends and several tribes, the Rainbow Tribe itself. Many of us are parts of that, many of that is parts of us. But other more formal tribes, like the Israel group from Seattle, about 300 folks up at Seattle. And in effect, we got to see, from seeing that kind of a group of people, we got to see some collectivities that are way to the left of ours. And we got to see a couple that was pretty far to the right of ours. And it was very interesting because it was just nice information to gather at this time while we're talking about this stuff. I'll tell you what, just to get this past, just what I think about the Rainbow Gathering, I think that we should send a busload a year to the Rainbow Gathering. I think that we should make the agreement that we're going to send a busload as an organized trip, that the farm says, okay, we're going to send a Greyhound load of people and whatever kind of support we decide to the gathering this year. And there's no electric music at those gatherings. There's no electric music. The kind of parks they pick are the kind where they don't even let you bring in a cart or a bicycle, much less a motorcycle or a car. What you bring in has got to come on your back. But I think that we should make the agreement that, like, each year we could pick out, you know, the 25 or 30 or so folks, and, you know, that mostly should be different folks, and that we should go there. And the way that we should go is we should support the gathering, that we should take several hundred pounds of soybeans and several hundred pounds of flour, and that we should set up a little kitchen and we should turn out soybean tortillas for the crowd, you know, and support the gathering in that fashion. Here's why we should support the gathering in that fashion. As Wavy Gravy says it so simply, it breeds hippies like mosquitoes. And there's a place where one of the reasons that we're the largest and most successful community of the kind that we are in the world is because thousands and thousands of our local neighbors have come down on these little roads way down into the inside of the farm and looked at us and dug on us and hit on us and got to know us and see what we're doing down in here. And because we gave that kind of access to the neighbors, we gave up a couple of things, like running around naked at will, which none of us as individuals, I believe, has anything against. You know, as individuals, I'm sure that none of us really has any terrible philosophical objection to that. And I think that, you know, that if we was in a place where we felt like that the other folks was not exploitive and there for the peep show, that it would be nice. But that as far as our public roads and stuff, that we've had to give that up on our roads and stuff because we're a little bit of an open town that way. But I think that it's real nice that we can go way back up in a state park where you have to come hundreds of miles to get there and walk miles and miles to get back up in there. So it ain't really none of your business and you're just going to have to accept whatever you find there, where we could go out once in a while and do that. And that those folks hold down that freedom for us, who go and do that once a year, they hold down that freedom for us to be sure that there's a place once in a while where we can. You know? I don't mean just, you know, walk around in your yard and get sun or don't wear no clothes while you do the garden or something like that. I mean when, you know, hundreds of them get together and stomp up a dust storm and make a lot of noise and hoot and holler and flap, you know? Tribal. Uncivilized. Thank you. Now, there's a, you know, because of that, that's how we should, I think we should, how we should relate to that gathering is that we should recognize that a lot of us went through there. Some of us may have been turned on to being hippies by that, you know, and it turned on some, you know, still doing it now. We shocked a few folks, I'm sure, but we didn't shock them with violence. We shocked them with skin. If skin's all it takes to shock you, you're too tender. But some folks were shocked, and there were some folks there who, because it's the kind of gathering it is, because it ain't nobody's gathering, because nobody can jump up and straighten it, because nobody owns the gathering, because it don't come under any one person's or any one tribe's real thing. That's the secret of the Rainbow Tribe, is the way it's an untribe. If it was too tribal, it would be more than they could hack. They wouldn't like it if it's too organized. Because the way it is nobody has to fall for the stuff that goes down. It's all a bunch of individuals doing what they want to do. You got to be strong enough individually yourself to put up with that. Very few people abused it. I mean, during their hour of silence, there was, you know, some lady who, just really threw a fit and screamed and raised hell. And all during their hour of silence, you know, it was, well, it's a rainbow gathering. It's part of the action. And, you know, and it came to where they had to own them in self-defense to make more noise than... But it wasn't really such high church anybody had to be offended by all that either. You know. There was some cat on the trip where you find at every corner of the gathering, but there's a better way, why don't nobody listen? You know, wandering around screaming. You'd find him, two or three people around him, they'd listen to him until they saw he wasn't going to get off the trip, and they'd drift away and he'd have to go find another audience to work on for a while. But basically, there's a bunch of hippies, much like the people sitting next to you. And Love Israel wanted to talk to me. I have a problem with that. I've been calling him Stanislaus, Ichabod. He won't tell me his name, so I'm going to use one I like. He wanted to talk to me, and I didn't mind talking to him as a person, but I did not want to talk to him at the level he was coming on to me at, because he wanted to come on like heads of state. I didn't want to be a head of state in the first place. Me and Thomas was too mushroomed to even think in that terms. So I didn't want to meet with him on that level. I didn't mind talking to him as a person. I was even curious, you know. But I didn't want to do that kind of a thing. But he's not a bad dude, and he followed me real close because he wanted to talk to me real bad. And so he sent messages to me. He came to see me twice. He followed me around. Finally, he just latched on beside me walking down the path and come on like he was going to hang out with me till we got down, you know. And he kept saying stuff I couldn't answer, not wanting to start a trip in the middle of a bunch of people. And I was getting ready to come home. My folks is due in here and was ready to come back, and I wanted to find Wavy Gravy and tell him that I love the gathering and the rainbows and like that, and that they shouldn't feel paranoid about me or what I think or anything. And latched on to old Stanislaus there. So me and him walked along talking a little bit, and it just got where there's so much stuff stacked up that I was going to have a talk. You know, it just got where there'd been enough stuff stuck in my ear I hadn't responded to that I was going to have to go back and talk to him. That's just all there is to it. So we went back over to his bus. It's a pretty Mac. It's very fancily got up. And, yeah, that's what it really was. Because we got to that bus. The bus was such a Nile River barge, and he was coming on so much like the Pharaoh that I couldn't be seen in a critter like that without screwing my reputation with the people, I felt. So the only way I could go in was that Wavy Gravy went with us, you know, so I could, you know, I had him as a kind of a catalyst and a solvent there to help it to happen. So he came in and hung around while we burned a couple till we got where we could talk. The first thing I told him was, if I'm going to hang around you, I'm going to have to tell you exactly what I think. And if you can't put up with me talking that way, we ain't going to be able to hang out together. And he allowed us how that was all right. I tried to explain to him the changes we're going through here and how we feel that these changes we're going through here reflect the greater mind of our movement around the world, and that the way he ran gave himself a lot of social position, and that for me to buddy up with him and hang out with him is to partake of that social position, and that if I partook of that social position, it would just be like partying with any other rich cat. It would be selling out the farm to go out and party with rich cats on the side. Now, I wasn't after his case, and it wasn't my argument. I didn't start it, and he followed me down and asked for it, you know. But we had to talk at that level. And he wasn't a bad dude, and he actually even, at first he kept trying. Everything I brought up, he would try to assure me and persuade me, because he's used to moving like that. And I could feel the pressure of persuasion and didn't want to feel it. It got to this place where I told him about something that I thought I was observing, and he started giving me this long rap about how he never does that. And about halfway through that rap, he says, but you think I'm doing it now, don't you? Said, you got me. So we began to come to a meeting of the minds about it, you know. And he was, you know, it's funny the stuff that I'm talking about him, because he ain't done anything that I ain't done a whole bunch of. But I told him that I thought that he was only able to do that because he was with such a small group, and that he wanted to have influence across the country. I told him I wanted to feel like that he was somebody who I could say, are your lawyers doing anything about the draft yet? You know, that we could be in cahoots at that kind of a level. And that I didn't want to meet him at a head of state level because I didn't feel like that. And that I couldn't invite him and several buses of people to come here unless the Council of Elders dug it or wanted it to happen. Well, I understood a lot of his stuff because he was, you know, I can see he's a hippie who got stoned, and he's trying to build some structures to don't lose his stoned. You know, and all the stuff he's putting together is kind of little machinery and mnemonics and computer and aids to try to help him keep his realization together, and he don't like any kind of magic that will take him off of his realization or any kind of magic that will make it look like he didn't have a realization. He's being very careful of it that way. I told him that was sort of a Western way to handle a Western civilization manner, Judeo-Christian tradition fashion of a way to handle your realization. And that a more Zen-like way to handle your realization would be that if your realization is true, that you don't have to do any ceremonies about it. That you don't have to do any ceremonies about it. I told him I felt like that I understood that he didn't tell me his real name, that he was operating out of the kind of place that Carlos Castaneda does. He don't like to tell you his history or where he was from because it don't let him be as much of a magician. If you know everything there is to know about him. And this, you know, I told him, I understood the form of the magic that he was doing, but I felt like I wanted to be friends with him and that me and him was friends. Why wouldn't he tell me his name? I told him that I'd always felt that the name that your mama gave you, or your daddy or whoever, the one that they gave you, had the virtue of being a name picked by someone else, no matter how weird or how outlandish it may be, that you didn't choose it, someone else chose it. And you didn't have any say-so of how you painted yourself in that picture. You just allowed yourself to be painted the way the universe painted you. And if, as there really is, your mama named you Zeppelin, like Zeppelin Wong's mama did in San Francisco to commemorate the year of the Zeppelin, you know, you don't change your name to something you like better than that. You just say, my mama had a funny sense of humor. She named me Zeppelin and called me Zepp. And you accept that rather than to put the name on you. And that it was I said to him, just in the floor conversation, wondering how old he was to know what year he checked into the scene here, you know. So, well, how old a man are you? He says, oh, can't tell you. I told him that I didn't tell astrologers my sign, but I'd tell him if he asked me straight. It was a pretty good meeting. There, one of the things I said as I left from him, well, it's one weird cult to another. We'll see you on down the line, you know. But it was very good to do that with him and to do that with the Rainbow Gathering right there in the same time frame, and to see a tribe left of us, although not a tribe that is, you know, one guy came on to me and says, man, you guys at the farm, you work too hard. You ought to lighten up, little man there. You ought to lighten up there at the farm some. You know that? You guys ought to lighten up. I said, we have our park 365 days a year. It takes a lot of work. You know? It does take a lot of work. I ain't sorry about it, though. I don't hope you ain't. They represent a piece of freedom, the Rainbowers do. That's why we ought to support them, because they represent a piece of freedom. And we got to say that, you know, even if we run a clean, good vibe family commune here, you know, nice place for the kids, that we's a bunch of hippies. And that we sometimes like to go out and stomp in the dust and get it on that way too. And we're grateful somebody throws one of those now and then so we can go to it. And that when we go to it, we shouldn't just go to stomp and flap, but we should take some beans, because it's breeding hippies. Like mosquitoes. Mm-hmm. Like Wavy said, there's 30 or 4 really dedicated Rainbowers who are the ones who bring that thing off. 30 or 40 hard workers who bring that thing off. And a whole lot of the others get turned on fresh every year. And it's really nice to see some lady who's a secretary somewhere in an office and has to be real square all year long. You know, what a nice thing it must be for her in her head to know, sometimes I boogie like the Queen of Sheba, baby. And it was a way where everybody was dressed up in their fanciest, but under those tribal ground rules, skin outclassed cloth. Yeah.
You mentioned that there were some tribes that were way left of us and some that were a little right of mm-hmm. us. We'd like to hear about that.
Well, I think the Rainbow Tribe itself is quite left of us in the sense that they're into anarchy. They're into an anarchy so deep that it can only exist on the top of a high mountain for about 2 weeks at a time without being busted. Yeah. Which is all right. But, you know, I have said before, I consider my room to be pure anarchy. When you in the living room, the Constitution's in effect. You know, everything, you know, the Constitution comes that far. My room is pure anarchy. Don't cop to any governments. And so it didn't give me the bends to go there to another place where they didn't cop to any governments. But the Love Israel tribe is, I'd say, which I'd call to the right of us. They're much more, they have more costuming, which, you know, we talked here about having the elders have something to recognize them by, and some folks liked it, some folks didn't, a lot of folks is kind of against it. They're more into more visible doctrine and stuff. They got a written contract. That's their contract of their trip. And the way it works, they assume the thing of taking the names they took because there's something in the Bible that says, let your speech be as yea and nay, and let your names be something like that. And they've construed that to mean to take these names. And so everybody in the tribe has got a name like Honesty or Charity or like that. Seriousness. The lawyer's name Serious, right? The thing about that is they got about 300 people. I'm sure out of about 300 people, they got a few people who ought to be named Pissed. Dumb. You know, if we're going to do that, you know, bound to be somebody in that tribe that ought to be named something like that. Doubt. So, there's that, but I understand why he did it, because like at one time, you know, I felt that the name thing was getting so loose, and people were assuming noms de plume so easily that there was something to be said for running under the colors that you was given without changing them a bunch. But we have developed handles. You know, we've developed handles here, and our handles are like tribal names. You know, it's like some kind of a tribal name. But the only difference is that when somebody comes and wants a deposit for the electricity, we don't try to put our handle on them. That's what Leslie and Peter and Bernie and those guys do. They be some guys with names to sign those things. You know, that's part of what they do. So, people who relate to us relate to some people with some names that they can chase down about the bills.
Oh, we talked about the draft. We felt like that the draft was something that was really important, that we showed some leadership in this country in a way, you know. Like, we wanted to find out what are the rules of the draft and how can we help our young folks here on the farm, and it felt like it would extend, you know. And we set up a subcommittee to find out where was it at, you know, about registering our 19 and 20-year-olds and to check that out and to give counseling.
That was one of the things that I had with Aristotle Israel there was, I said, what are you going to do about your young men in the draft? He says, they're all too crazy to go. I said, that's all right, but what does that do to support the other young people in the United States? What does that support do to support hundreds of thousands of other ones out there who don't do nothing for them? So then the last thing I said to him when he was saying, I still want to, you know, work out with you and get to know you better and stuff like that. That's what we really parted on. We want to work out and get to know each other better. But I said, if you want to be collective with me, fight the nukes, and if you have any lawyers that are friends, get them into the draft business and start finding out what can we do and what are our options and stuff. Our lawyers are already working on that. And why, you know, you ought to have, you have some kind of lawyers who do stuff for you. You're a big operation. You do numbers. I know you have a lawyer. Those lawyers ought to be working on that. And if you want to be collective with me, those are the places you can start being collective with me. And we'll do that for a while and see how much other collective we can get.